Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Thanks, Gabe. Thanks, Derek. Before we dive into everything that tonight has, can I ask you guys something? In light of approaching the word or not approaching the word as common, and seeing that tonight there is a significantly smaller group that we have, there's people traveling, some family that has other things going on. We have mom and dad traveling with the views, and the decks are gone. And so we know that there's a smaller group tonight. Can I ask that we move in a little bit? Even if it's just, let's scoot in a little bit, scoot up, let's just get closer so that we're able to all just be a little bit more tight-knit as we're receiving the word for tonight. All right, I know that was kind of a abrupt shift in some things, but I think that there is an importance to getting in close tonight. Even thinking about just the environment that we had set and what Derek released about what he was feeling for the family, feeling on behalf of the family this week in the environment, the intricate details that Yahweh has for tonight, I feel that there's a significance to move close into that and to be able to see all of it. We know that there's a big perspective shift when you're distanced from something versus when you move in close and you choose to look at the intricate details, right? We are continuing in our posture and in our forward movement as we continue through Numbers. There's such activation and such power that we have the ability, the opportunity to grab hold of and be activated in. And tonight is absolutely another one of those opportunities. In spite of circumstances, in spite of other details that may be distracting us, whether it be the week, whether it be whatever it is, tonight, regardless of all of those things, is not to be missed. We remember the critical things that have been highlighted in the book of Numbers as we go through this. At the very beginning of it, we talked about the wilderness, we talked about testing, we talked about the readiness ratio. We had highlighted the two aspects of the wilderness that we can expect, which were testing and wandering, right? Everybody remembers that? What were some of the dynamics of testing that we can expect to see? Exposure. Exposing our motives, right? What was another one? Purifying our hearts. With testing, there always comes exposure, but exposure is an appointed time that we have opportunity to really grab hold of and grow from, right? We know and we've learned that the wilderness and the aspect of wandering in the wilderness is not a bad thing, right? I think that we've been having to continually go out of that mindset when it comes to wandering being a term that we could very easily deem as a negative thing. Where we think it's just this aimless kind of motion that's happening. It's pointless. It's aimless. It's frustrating. There's incredible purpose and divine order in the wandering that he has us in because it's directed by his systems, right? Whereas the flip side is wandering where you actually are aimless and you're directionless and there's an absence from, we are absent from his systems.
Yeah.
So we remember that all of these dynamics are things that we're continually aware of and we're holding on to and recognizing, of course, above all of it, that this is our story. This is our history. This is our family, our lineage, our DNA. And everything that week to week is further revealed and emphasized is a continued adding to our story and us being continually granted access to his sovereignty in all of that. Highlighting a couple things that we left last week with, and I wanted to do this to kind of just refresh our minds and put us in a posture for tonight. At the end of the night, well, not at the end necessarily, but partway through the night when Dad was releasing, he said, when we approach him as common, death is the result. Now, we can easily dismiss that because it sounds, in a way, it sounds dramatic. Hear me when I say this. It can sound dramatic. Like if you approach something as uncommon, it's a sudden, instant death. It sounds intense. It sounds dramatic. It sounds like it's an intense picture that you can see, right? Now that can be true, but I want us to even be pressed in the thought process of thinking that the approach of us viewing ourselves as common, viewing him as common, can create a separation that ultimately just continues to lead to death, right? One of the absolutely powerful points that was emphasized last week, in addition to that, was the zeal that we're called to carry. And when zeal is under the proper delegated authority, it will lead to separation and division. Now hear that dichotomy, that when you approach things as common, there's a separation and it leads to death. But the flip side of that, and how he wants us to operate, is with absolute zeal, which still will cause division and separation, but it's unto him and away from, apart from, the things that separate us from him, right? Can you see the dynamic and the circle that's at play there? So I want us to be encouraged and postured in all of those things, and really viewing this multidimensionally, that there's a level of zeal that we're being called to, and there's separation that will happen outwardly, there's separation that will happen inwardly. And as we activate that and posture ourselves that way leading into the word tonight, that there will be things that are separated within us so that we can be made closer to him. The last thing I wanted to just posture the family in and encourage us in tonight is there is a, without having obviously seen Megan's notes or hearing directly from her what she's going to release or what Yahweh's put on her to share for the family, I wanted to just highlight an incredible dynamic that we see in this portion, which is that there is a continued accounting for his people that leads to responsibility, it leads to activation, and it leads to grabbing hold of and getting your hands on what he wants you to in the first place. So carry that in the forefronts of our minds tonight, and in our posture, that when things are being accounted for in us and we're continuing to activate a level of zeal that divides the things in us that are not meant to be there, be looking for those activations, those things that he calls you to carry and pick up and move forward with as we continue in Numbers and grab hold of everything that tonight has to offer.
All right, you guys. I want to express something a little bit different tonight in the intimacy that's being described, the pulling in close, and it being a smaller group, that part of what I feel tonight is for is it's an intimate expression over you. That I might just cry through. But what I don't want is for it to feel like a teaching, but to be receiving what's taught as an expression. That because you are not just sitting under him, but moving with his presence, that there are things that he wants to ensure you are carrying as you do. And we have an opportunity, I feel like, to address some things, not just in tonight's portion, but next week, because I am really seeing all of what we'll be studying, Parasha 99 and 100, as kind of this flowing, not story, but expression.
Yeah.
And it's an opportunity for some of the things that we have put on the table at the very beginning of our journey to be revisited, to be looked at again. And when we get that opportunity, if we hear it as a teaching, you're going to miss the exchange that's available. If something's on the table and he says, it's time to look at it again, and you're not present, or you're not present enough to look at that thing again, and as you look at it, then in you, whatever it used to be for you, or used to mean, or maybe the way that it looks kind of changed, you're not going to be able to examine that and in a moment literally trade it for what it's meant to be. Because the reason something's on the table is because it has to be reevaluated.
Yeah.
Right. We're giving him an opportunity for whatever's on the table to speak to again.
Right.
Because you're not in the same place.
Right. That's good.
When you put what you thought you knew on the table, you walked away from it.
Yeah.
Hopefully. But that's part of what we're going to talk about tonight. Hopefully, we've walked away from it, and now he says, I want you to look again, and I'm going to reveal some things to you so that while we keep moving, we're not wandering aimlessly. Because although his intention is for you to wander with him and with intentionality, that doesn't mean that you won't wander off on your own. So it's true that in the wilderness, his presence is with you, and there is purpose in the testing and in the purification as you wander, but you don't have to submit to the test. You don't have to come under the testing. That's a choice. And just like you don't have to submit to the test, you also don't have to acknowledge that there's anything that needs to be purified. Those are his intentions for you. And it's incredible that the way that we operate as a family is that he makes those intentions known to you over and over and over again. Whether it's through someone in our family, through mom and dad every single Friday, however that looks in your time that you have every day, he is expressing those intentions, and you get to accept them and apply them, or you can be aimless. Despite every single intention. So we're going to go over a couple of things that have been on the table, and I want everything that was just released over you guys to be your positioning, like when Jay's talking about the exposure of our hearts, the purification of our motives, that is why we're revisiting or looking at some really, really fundamental things that at first when Yahweh put them on my spirit, I thought, you know what those are, right? Wait, maybe we don't. Do I? I don't think that I do. in the sense of just allowing in my process to then look over, glance over at that table and say, oh, okay, yeah, I did put that down. So show me. And that's what this last week has been for me personally. And part of what I'm carrying for you is that you would be able to leave tonight from that intimate expression and have a heart that is so confident in the way that he has positioned you, the way that he has waited for you, the way that he has pursued and searched you out, and that zeal that Dad released last week, that we would leave with hearts that would be more zealous for him than when we came in, because we're willing to revisit some of these things. Okay?
All right.
Okay. Can we do that? Does everybody feel like they can do that? Okay. All right. So we're going to focus on three different areas between tonight and next Friday. So tonight we are going to talk about adoption and sonship. And then we're also going to talk about redemption. Next week, well, flip those. You guys are taking notes. I feel bad because I'm just talking. So now I'm trying to think like your notes. We're going to talk about redemption first. Then we're going to talk about sonship and the spirit of adoption. There's a reason why we're going to speak to redemption first. Okay? Then, after we revisit the spirit of adoption, sonship, then we're going to carry everything that's imparted, all of those intentions, into next week, where we're going to talk about one thing. And we're going to talk specifically about leaving the, I don't know if I would call it a system. It's not a system necessarily in the way that time is or the other things that have been released, health, those kinds of things. But we're leaving an internal system or structure in you that demands that you prove something, which his order is so powerful, because proving is really the result of not walking in sonship and about you trying to redeem yourself. Okay. But that's next week. Okay? So the releasing might feel a little bit out of order, in that I know that in this chapter we talk about roles and responsibilities, and that's where Yahweh dropped. We need to address this desire or need to prove something. Okay? So we are not going to talk tonight about roles. We're not going to talk tonight about the responsibilities of each family, of each household. We're going to save that for next week. Okay? So, like I said, tonight, though, is redemption and the spirit of adoption. All right. I'm not going line by line. I'm just releasing. It's hard for me because I do like to be more of a teacher, and I see things that way, but I'm not going to do that tonight. All right. Redemption. Okay. So in this portion, we read about redemption money. We're going to go back through a little bit of what Dad already talked about last week, or kind of set us up for last week, and we'll get into that even more when it comes to the spirit of adoption and what he was speaking to as far as the language of adoption. But remember, the firstborn is Yahweh's, right? And money in this redemption, money in this portion
is in exchange for those who the Levites couldn't stand in place for. Okay? Practically, really simply, there were more firstborn sons than Levite males.
Yeah.
You guys read that?
Yeah.
So the extra 273 firstborn sons were assigned a monetary value, was 5 shekels, and the money was given to the priests, right, to the tabernacle.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a price that's paid for a life that's redeemed. Do you guys remember the definition of redemption when we were revisiting truth or everything that we thought we knew? This was a while ago. But that redemption is an exchange. So it's a buying back of something that's been lost. It's about being released or set free through a payment of a ransom. It's also a purchase made to secure our deliverance. Huh? Sure. Okay, so redemption is an exchange. It's a buying back of something that was lost to be released or set free through the payment of a ransom. A purchase made to secure our deliverance. There have been some things we've learned about redemption since we put what that means back on the table. Okay, Yahweh has always been the Redeemer. Did we know the ways in which he was truly a Redeemer until we were able to dive in to Torah? Does that feel new to you? The ways that he has always been a Redeemer? When we put redemption on the table, one of the reasons we had to place it there and leave it was because redemption was only about the blood of Yeshua.
Yeah.
Yeshua was the Redeemer. Jesus was our redemption. Yahweh, as we know now, has always been a Redeemer. He always, always provided a means for exchange.
Yeah.
Always. There was always an opportunity for freedom from sin and slavery. And then we experienced the exchange versus Yeshua redeeming us from Yahweh himself.
Right.
Yep.
And redeeming us from the law.
Right.
Those are some huge distinctions that have been made, and I want to make sure that when we look back at what's on the table, that we're seeing what has been traded out.
Yeah.
Your mindset that has been put here and then literally an exchange was made. Does everyone feel like they can identify that exchange?
Yes.
Yeah.
In that way.
Yeah.
Yeshua being an exchange versus redeeming us from Yahweh.
Yes.
And that's how Yahweh operates, because he is the Redeemer. He's always made a way for there to be an exchange for you. Okay. Why does there always have to be a way? Why does there always have to be a means? Because these are debts that you can't pay. You are human. These are divine laws. And we've tried to apply human effort to divinity. It doesn't work. It's not about human effort. But one of the things that we wrestle with, which is part of why he asked us to put redemption on the table as we walked out of religion into truth, is because we, in that human effort, try to redeem ourselves.
Yeah.
So while we claim that he is a redeemer or worship him as a redeemer, I mean, I'm literally thinking back to a cry of my heart calling out him as a redeemer and not understanding yet in my spirit or having this intimate knowledge of what it actually means for me to lay down my human effort and completely give myself over to the process of an exchange. Because it's not a altar call or a moment, but it is absolutely a lifestyle of laying down your human effort and acknowledging what it is that he has to purchase back, or the debt, the ongoing debt in the sense of outside of the law, that my humanity can't meet. So we're going to talk a little bit about what it looks like to try to redeem yourself. Because while this portion focuses on redemption, I feel like he wants us to pick that, not that word, but that source back up, and that aspect of who he is, that name, and engage it. Okay. So have you heard that term, like, I'll redeem myself, or used it, you know, like, I'm going to redeem myself,
right.
Like I sucked before, and now I'm going to be awesome, or even in, I mean, it can be in a mistake you made, it could be in a relationship you've had, it could be a cycle or a pattern that you repeat over and over again, and you're just like, I'm going to redeem myself. I'm going to make this right.
Yeah.
I'm not speaking to that there's not ever a responsibility that you have to carry to restore things.
Yes.
But it's about learning how to come under his divinity by acknowledging my humanity and giving myself over to an exchange and a purchase. Because when we say, I'm going to redeem myself, what redeem yourself really implies is this human-centered, self-driven effort. And part of what we can apply that to is literally the earning of salvation. Or to make amends on your own for mistakes through your own personal action. Now, that kind of sounds noble.
Yeah.
Okay? At the same time, it's not always just about your human effort. Meaning, that might not be the only thing going on. The other thing that can be going on is that sometimes we simply just don't want to be purchased. Let me say it a little bit differently. Sometimes you don't want to be purchased back. This is just different language for something we've already discussed. Because it's about not wanting to be owned. So when you're in slavery and you believe you're free and a redeemer comes and says, I'm going to make a way for you. I'm going to provide a means, an exchange for you out of the slavery that you're in. And you say, but I'm not a slave. That's what I'm talking about. And I'm not talking, again, I'm not talking about a moment. I'm talking about a mindset. I'm talking about a lifestyle. Because when we're operating outside of that lifestyle, that's when we have to put it back on the table and say, am I not willing to allow him to be a redeemer in my life?
Yeah, right.
Okay, so sometimes we simply don't want to be purchased. You don't want to be owned. You believe you're free in slavery. Sometimes you think you're worth more. I also, as I go over these, I want you guys to be thinking of the context of moving from Egypt into the wilderness now. Because we're going to get into it more when we go over the spirit of adoption, but there was an expression of redemption. There was literal redemption over your life when he called you out of a place in Egypt and he presented an exchange to you. And some of us, or all of us, maybe at a different part in our heart or a different season in our journey, or maybe we receive it and then we give it back. I don't know. But either way, this is still a walking out of redemption. From 400 years of slavery to 40 years in the wilderness. It's not just about your salvation story where you said yes to being redeemed, maybe, but it's also about the fact that the Redeemer came over your life again and said, I want you, I don't want you to have to pay that debt. What did you do? What did you do in response? Okay, so be thinking of that too.
Okay.
All right. Don't want to be owned, believing we're free in slavery, thinking we're worth more. What does that look like in our lives? To think we're worth more. Mm-hmm. Entitlement. Proving. Meaning, you need to show me how much you love me. While the Redeemer stands literally in between the place of slavery that he met you in with the exchange that he has for you to cross over, and you say, prove it. He's like, I did. I don't know what else you want from me. I don't know how else to show you. Maybe another reason we don't want to be purchased back is we don't trust the purchaser. We don't trust the Redeemer. We have to make sure that everything that Yahweh's releasing or revealing about himself as we go through Torah, that you are not just like letting it, I don't know how, kind of like it's like hitting, it's like hitting you in the head and then it just bounces off. And then you're like, prove yourself, prove yourself, prove yourself. And he's like revealing and it just in and out, in and out, in and out, head, head, chest, whatever that looks like in your life. But the revelations that we've had about his character are transforming the voices that you've heard before that were false, that caused these trust issues to begin with, if you activate the exchange. Which again is more proof. Like him proving himself again.
Yeah.
Offering himself up as a redeemer again.
Yeah.
Revealing himself again.
Yep.
Okay. So I'm going to repeat these one more time and then we're going to move into what's next. So it's not always about human effort. Sometimes we simply don't want to be purchased back. We don't want to be owned. We believe we're free in slavery, so there's no need for a purchase, right? Even when, sorry, I'm trying to just go back over them, but then I start releasing more. But sometimes even when, believing we're free in slavery. Even when everyone around you tells you you are still in bondage. You are still a slave, and I'm trying to tell you the reason you can't tell you're a slave is because you're a slave.
Yeah. Right.
Ooh, ooh. We all have, which is why I can be like, I have the right to hit my own head. Okay, we think we're worth more, or we don't trust the purchaser or the redeemer, which I hope we're trading out as he reveals more of who he is. Okay, so how do you know if you're trying to redeem yourself or if you haven't received his redemption? Okay, part of why this is so important. What does it mean if we don't receive his redemption? Yes. There can't be salvation. Do you remember putting salvation back on the table? Okay. So part of what he's extending to us is to relook at salvation and ask ourselves, where do I stand? Okay. Which the question is just what I already asked. Have you allowed him to buy you back? Ever? Like truly? Even if you said I'm trying not to really get into salvation, but it's like one is the transaction and one is the expression of. So I don't know how not to, because you have a redeemer who saves. Okay? So we're not offended and we're not bothered because we already put salvation on the table. We already put redemption on the table. Okay? So the questions would be, have you allowed him to buy you back ever? Okay, if you have, did you allow him to buy you back from the system of Egypt that owned you? Applying all of those things that I just said. All right, now here's some tools to help you assess the answer to that question. Okay? All right. So how do you know if you're trying to redeem yourself? I'm sure there's more. These are just some things that that Yahweh presented, was you focus on the past. An aspect of focusing on the past would be needing to make things right or demanding that he does.
Can you say that again?
Yeah. Focus on the past. You need to make things right or demand that he does. Again, that's out of human effort. But focusing on the past is in opposition to what was just released about having Torah, applying it so that it can literally reconcile your past. If you cannot move on from the past, or you literally reside there, you live there, you dwell there, and you know what that means, you know what that feels like, it's in your head, it's out of your mouth, it's in your dreams, it causes you anxiety, it's something that's still, it's like right here. That can point to this transaction not having taken place, because what redemption does is it purchases you back so you can be here. Does that make sense? Okay. All All right. Another way to evaluate if you are trying to redeem yourself or if you haven't fully received his redemption is you have a filter of shame or condemnation. Maybe you always feel like you're in trouble. Maybe you struggle with hiding. The reason why that can point to not fully receiving redemption is because it implies that he isn't enough. So again, it becomes about your effort,
yes.
Not fully who he is and what he offered.
Yes.
Which also can be connected to focusing on the past.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's good.
It's like, I still need you to do this, or I need you to show me this.
Yeah.
Rectify this situation, implying he isn't enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Another way that we can tell is if you struggle with continuous judgment of others. If those kinds of thoughts come easily to you, or maybe you struggle with seeing someone in their fullness, part of what that implies is when we work to earn or be valued, we demand the same of other people without knowing.
Mm-hmm.
So then your filter is judgment. That was the best face. Okay. And part of what is hard about identifying that is it can always seem justified.
That's real.
It could be true. Meaning what you're judging could be true in that you are evaluating a situation, but where is it coming from and what right anyway do we have to judge? So we have to make sure it's coming from, obviously judgment's never good, I'm not saying. Sometimes it's fine. What I mean is, in this context, it can point to you working out of your own human effort, and so then you put that on someone else. You should be working out of your own human effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You're demanding that someone prove their value to you because you're trying to prove your own. Which, if you've already acknowledged that you need saving and you need a redeemer to make salvation possible, judgment should be off the table. Right? We put that back on the table, but that is basic, foundational, I don't know what to call it, kingdom principle. I was going to say, like Christianity, like that's even in Christianity, that's basic foundation. It should be. But then there's so much judgment that operates. Why? Maybe we didn't fully receive redemption for what it was meant to be, or didn't understand the cost that was paid for our debt. To empower judgment. I mean, it doesn't make sense. To be set free from being judged of your sin, that then as soon as your debt is paid, that you look at others and decide, well, you're not worth a debt.
Yeah.
But it's one of the biggest things that we have to continuously even disciple within each other is remember what was done for you. How quick we forget.
Yeah.
Or it wasn't fully done in you.
Sure. Yeah.
That's what we're addressing.
Yeah.
Okay. Number four. I didn't know this was a term until being a part of this family. So I'm just going with the same term because I don't know what else to call it. But essentially, a savior complex is another one. I'm going to break that down. So trying to redeem yourself can look like trying to save others. Because again, he isn't enough or he isn't trustworthy. And it can reflect your own pride and your own ability to redeem when it's not your role. Or it can even point to the lack of need for redemption that you feel you have, which is entitlement, right? So that could be another reason why we operate in always having to like rescue other people in that sense. It's being someone else's redeemer. Okay, I want to talk a little bit more about that aspect of entitlement within that mindset or that way of operating. Because if you're already entitled to something, then you can't ever carry the cost, which means you can't ever live a lifestyle of laying down your life. So while you are calling yourself a savior or you are rescuing people, you've never learned how to lay your life down. Because if you're entitled, that literally, the definition would imply that you don't understand the cost for something. Does that make sense? Even in like a practical sense, if I'm entitled in my house to our groceries, I don't understand the cost of those groceries. I don't understand the financial cost. I don't understand meal planning. I don't understand grocery shopping. I don't understand food prep. I don't understand that my dad eats specific things because of whatever reason. I don't understand. Like, you don't understand the intricacies of the cost. That's what entitlement is. If you don't understand the cost or literally see it, you can't carry it. The cost is what we're meant to carry because it safeguards us from pride, judgment, entitlement, arrogance, all of those things that oppose his character. Does that help? Okay. Now, we've got to go deep because you can also say, well, I do acknowledge the cost. I'm always acknowledging the cost of his blood. My walk has been about acknowledging the cost. There is a difference between acknowledging and carrying.
Oh, that's good.
It's the same. I am not saying anything new. It is different language for the same thing as slap a name on it.
Yeah, that is true. That's good.
But what you're slapping on is all the cost. That cost was so great. His cost. He gave up everything. Jalen's trying not to laugh. But that is the reality, right? Of acknowledging that cost versus literally carrying that cost every moment of your life. You know that the life you live, the moment the Redeemer said, I'm going to offer you a way out, that your life was so not yours anymore. And you carry that with you always. Always. Because there's an exchange when you're redeemed. Literally, my life was exchanged. It's not mine. I want that to make sense in a way that it hasn't before. Because we're looking at it again out of everything, all the context that we have now that we didn't before. Okay. The fifth kind of indicator that you can use to evaluate if you try to redeem yourself or if he's your redeemer is your life feels like you're living without purpose. You are redeemed so that you can have purpose. You are redeemed so you can have purpose. We are redeemed so we can serve our purpose. If you aren't aware of your purpose, you may not have fully received his redemption. Because how can you question value and the purpose for your literal life when he exchanged something for it? All right, we're going to move into the spirit of adoption. Okay. I'm just checking the order of things. Okay, so just a little bit of teaching for context, and then we're going to go back into some releasing. All right, so here's where we're going to revisit some of Dad's teaching from last week, because it's really important for the releasing of the Spirit. Okay, so the language of the spirit of adoption continues. Did anyone recognize when Dad said that, the language that was being used as spirit of adoption language before Dad said, this is spirit of adoption language?
No.
Okay. It's okay if you didn't. I'm genuinely asking if that was a, okay. That's good to be, like it's good to be aware of where we are, because that's part of everything that's been on the table, but it's also why he's asking us to go back through some foundational things, because the spirit of adoption was personally expressed over each and every single one of you because you're kingdom heirs. So there are some things that were imparted over you when he called you to a place that he wants you to revisit. And he wants you to look at again with a new perspective and outside of the narrative that you were under. Okay? Okay. So after Yahweh spared the Israelites, the firstborn during the plague of the firstborn in Egypt, that's when he declared that every firstborn son and animal belonged to him. Right? The firstborn males then served as heads of household. Then we move to Mount Sinai. And at Mount Sinai, the worship of the golden calf takes place by the Israelites, and their privilege of priesthood was revoked. Okay? That's when Moshe put out the call, who will stand for him? I want to read that. Okay. When Moshe saw that the people were unrestrained because Aaron had let them run wild to become a joke among their enemies, He stood at the gate of the camp and said, "Whoever is on Adonai's side, let him come to me." Then all the sons of Levi gathered themselves together to him. Okay. That's important for us revisiting the personalization of the expression that's been released over all of you. Okay. So the tribe of Levi was the only group that demonstrated loyalty to Yahweh in that moment. They responded to Moshe's call. So he set them apart as a substitute for the firstborn. Okay. Here, the firstborn sons of Israel were then required to be redeemed by paying a price. So that's how we got here. Okay, did everyone get that when Dad taught? Okay, I just want to make sure that we have that context. Okay, so they had to be redeemed by paying a price, and the Levites were taken instead to serve Yahweh. Mm-hmm. All right, then we see each household within the tribe of Levi be given a specific role and responsibility. Okay, and they're strategically positioned. That's what we're going to dive into next week. Right? Because we need the foundation of redemption and sonship first. Okay. So what we see is the spirit of adoption released once outside of the system that they were set free from. So the Redeemer came like he promised, and he set his people free. They cried out. They called out. They were broken. They were under a system. They were slaves. They were treated horribly. They were stripped of their identity. They could not serve God. They could not worship. And Yahweh responds, and he redeems them from slavery. He redeems them from those who imprisoned and captured and enslaved them.
Right?
Right?
Right.
That's the Exodus that takes place.
Yeah.
Okay. He releases the Spirit again and again as he calls to his people and says, you remember how often when we've been reading the word that it says, and they are mine, and I am their God, I am Adonai, and he's reminding them who he is and his character and what he's done. I am your Redeemer.
Yeah.
Remember? Okay, so he keeps releasing over them because they have been so stripped of their identity, they don't know who they are and they don't know who they belong to.
Yeah, right.
They don't know who they should be loyal to.
Yeah. Right.
They don't know who they should serve.
Right.
Even though they cried out to be set free because they knew they were in slavery.
Yeah.
So he releases the spirit of adoption again and again, and he calls them his, and he says, they're you're mine.
Yeah.
I am your God. I am your Father. I am your Lord.
Yeah.
I am Adonai.
Yeah.
But the system was still in the nation.
Yes.
So the nation was set free, but they were redeemed unto their salvation. They were redeemed, but the system was still in them.
Yes.
Yeah. That's good. That's good.
Right.
And we see all of the choices and the decisions that can be made when, although you have said yes to redemption, that when the system is still in you, the way that you still can walk aimlessly and in opposition. Okay. All right. So the picture that we have is our story. There was a people who cried out for a redeemer.
Right.
There was a people who couldn't identify exactly what was going on, or maybe even realize what it was that we were slaves to. But we knew that we weren't fully serving, worshiping, and living free, freely bound to Him. So we cried out. And who showed up? The Redeemer. The Redeemer showed up, and he called you His and to a place. So He heard and saw you. And then the spirit of adoption was released over you. The spirit of adoption was released over you to combat the system that's still in you. Which is why when the spirit of adoption was released over you, you did not want it. And it might be why you still don't. And why it bothers you, and why it's hard for you, and why you don't like the way it feels, and why you don't like the way it looks, and why you don't like certain names that are used, and why you have an issue with things that we still have issues with. The spirit of adoption was expressed over an entire community of people because the Redeemer came and said, I'm going to show you who you are and who you belong to. I don't want you to relate to me like you did to Pharaoh. I'm not him. I'm a father. So then what does the father do? He says, and I've got instructions. Well, I don't like those either. Not only do I not want you to be a dad, not only do I not want a mom, but I do not want him or her giving me instructions. While Pharaoh stripped you of your identity, broke down your mind so that it could only serve his purpose, built up in you an attraction to things that completely oppose who he is. And whatever that looks like in your intimate life. So that when the Redeemer came in the form of a father, you would say, oh, no, I'm not in slavery. And you fought. The system still in the nation, still in the people. The spirit of adoption, just like a mirror in the Word. We've talked about this before, how every single part of the journey has been ours because there is no difference. It's not a story. It's not a book. It's a pattern, and it's the way that he literally conveys who he is to his people, but also it's the blueprint of how he operates as a redeemer. The spirit of adoption isn't some weird made-up thing because we're weird. And I know we're far removed from this, but I just want us to hit it again because we're in it in the Word now. We're seeing the language before the New Testament.
Right.
We're seeing the language that it's not just about, well, now you have his blood, and so now I can kind of prescribe to the, like, adoption and being grafted in, but it's the way that he reveals himself and reminds his chosen people that cried out for him who they belong to. And what it means to be a son. And what it means to be a daughter, not a slave. If you didn't have the spirit of adoption released over you and operating in this house, you would not be able to see the difference between slavery and sonship. You would not be able to see the difference between Pharaoh and a father. And your allegiance would still be to a taskmaster, a slave owner, instead of a father who only wants to dwell with a son and with a daughter. And just like the tribe of Levi, he called you to set you apart. You answered, and now it's time to what? To move. But will our movement be intentional and a result of that dwelling and that coming under of the spirit of adoption and sonship and being fully redeemed? Or will we spend 40 years aimlessly wandering all off on our own because we can't re-look at redemption and we can't come under the spirit of adoption and sonship? The spirit of adoption and sonship, why has it been so necessary for our journey? We're going to personalize it. As well as why was it so necessary to be released over his people again and again? We've talked a little bit about it, but we're going to get into it more.
Okay.
It helps us understand fully our redemption price. Your purchase price. That, if we can start to carry, if we can start to carry that cost, we are going to be zealous. We are going to walk completely differently. Laziness, not moving. Oh my gosh, what's the word? Thank you. Complacency, all of that. You don't understand the cost. If you have time to be careless and unthoughtful about his intentions for you and the directions he gives you, you do not understand or carry the cost. The spirit of adoption released over you helps you understand fully who your Redeemer is and what he paid. That exchange, that legal covenant contract, it precedes the spirit. That's part of the problem. That's part of why we had to put it back on the table. Our salvation is subjective outside of the acknowledgement of the principles of the law.
You say that one more time.
Yes. Salvation is subjective outside of the principles of the law. I'm talking about the literal covenant exchange, the purchase, the contract. Now, because you are sons, this is why the spirit of adoption is necessary. Because you are sons, God sent the Ruach, of his son into our hearts.
Yes.
So you are no longer a slave, but a son. And if a son, also an heir. The legalities come first, then the spirit. The heart transfer should come after being purchased.
Right.
So redemption is given so you can receive the spirit of adoption. You are redeemed into the spirit of adoption. Because the price that's being paid, the exchange that's being made with wherever you are or whoever you're serving, that then has to be confronted by sonship. Right?
Yes.
Slave to son. Slave to heir. So you were taken out of a system to understand unto what and who you were redeemed by. That's what the spirit of adoption, that expression, does for you.
Yeah.
It reveals who you were redeemed by. A father,
right.
Not a taskmaster. And it's missing everywhere.
Yes. Yeah.
And Yahweh was so good to you that he gave you a literal, I use that word a lot, so I look at John. He gave you a physical expression. Because you were chosen and set apart, and he knew you needed it. It's hard to be under slavery your whole life and come out with a word, come out by a word, and know the difference between the voice of a father and the voice of Pharaoh.
That's good.
Yep. You were given an expression on earth in this family. And it's one of the things that we struggle or have struggled the most with and have had the most pushback. Mockery, rejection, accusation in the community because of. It's an expression by the Redeemer out of slavery for you to understand who you are as a son and a daughter. You were received by a mother and a father to confront everything you've known under a taskmaster.
Yes.
What do mom and dad always say? It's an expression. It's an expression. Let it be an expression. Let it be an expression. The spirit of adoption has, and in the word, it provides his true identity. It reveals his true identity. What have we learned about him under the spirit of adoption in comparison to what we knew? Meaning, like, what we thought about him and his character in the word. What were some things you thought?
Yeah.
I want to hear.
Mean.
He was mean. He was inconsistent. I want to hear.
Far away.
Far away. I want to hear. What were some things you thought?
Yeah, hard to understand.
What?
He was impossible.
He was impossible? A jokester? Come on.
Yeah.
I want to hear him.
He's a taker.
He's a taker. Wrathful. Okay, that's good. What have you learned about him now? Let's go. He's consistent. Let's go.
He's made a way. He has a system.
He has a system. He's made a way.
Gracious.
He's gracious.
He's righteous.
He's righteous from the back room.
He's good.
He's good. Is he bloodthirsty? Is he vengeful? He's what? He pursues? Yeah. We're the ones who leave him alone? Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah? He corrects. He brings correction. Okay. Those are good. All right. So under the spirit of adoption, because there's a perspective flip that comes with that spirit, it's an immediate exchange. Without that spirit, you still have a wrathful, you have your own filter, because your mind is still under a taskmaster.
Yes.
The spirit of adoption comes and sits you down under a father.
Yes.
While you're discerning the difference between the father's voice and the voices you've heard before, you're now under a father, which is completely different. So even if it takes time for you to walk out that process of discerning the difference, he's who you're sitting under. He becomes, in that moment, the exchange is he becomes father. Not all those other things. It's a walking out process, but again, you at least are under a dad.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're not called a slave, but you're called a son. Which means that you get to receive instructions differently than if you were a slave.
Yeah.
It affords you a completely different perspective.
Yeah.
Because if I'm still under a taskmaster, I'm not only not owning things for myself, which can be part of why we're attracted to a taskmaster, but I also have no identity. Once he calls you a son, that identity gets put on you and you start to get hungry for responsibility. The numbness, the coldness, the lax nature, all of the things that develop over time, the callousness that develops under a taskmaster,
yep,
begins to soften and dissipate, and your heart starts to turn to responsibility and servanthood, because the identity you're carrying now under a dad is that you're a son and a daughter. What do we know our kids want more than anything when they're little? Responsibility. They can't wait for the next responsibility.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
When they're young. Then when they get older and they start to grapple with their identity, that's when the shift comes. And they're not sure anymore about responsibility. It has nothing to do with laziness. It has nothing to do, and I'm not saying that those aren't things that manifest in that way, but it is a pursuit of identity that then grounds you in wanting to be a servant with the entirety of your life. And if that looks like cleaning dishes And then it looks like being a wife and a mother, or it looks like being a responsible employee at work. Whatever that looks like in your life, it's out of a place of identity. That's the difference. That's part of what it looks like when you are operating as a son in every environment that you have. It's an overflow of identity. You won't push off responsibilities. You are, it's a joy. It's a joy to serve in all of the ways that you can, because it's an expression of your identity. And your identity is a gift because it comes from a father who said, this is who you are, versus a slave master who said, this is what you'll produce for me.
Right.
That's what develops a cold heart. That's what develops a callous nature. Yeah. That's what causes us to begin to feel like we have no purpose. But when the Redeemer comes and expresses sonship over you after you say yes, that begins to change everything.
Yeah.
So we receive his true identity. That's part of why sonship is so, that expression is so necessary. All right, the last one is obviously so that we can begin to receive our own identity. If it wasn't clear enough, we just dove into the census of Egypt. The census of Egypt laid out the purpose for you of why the system that you came out of benefited not you, but Pharaoh so much. Stripped of your history, stripped of your lineage, nameless, without a heritage, without a role, and no inheritance. But simply by being called a son instead of a slave, you gain it all. History, lineage, name, heritage, role, and an inheritance. All of it.
Good.
By taking this and laying it down, receiving redemption, and receiving the expression of sonship, you literally exchange it all. That's where we are. We're receiving all of sonship right now. You have gained. We have gained all of this in pieces and all at the same time. It's like we gained it all, but we didn't understand what we were gaining. So he's had to break it all down, which is why he said, can you guys please just put it all on the table? Everything you have access to, everything that's attributed to me, all of it, can you put all your stuff, put it all here, and I want us to be intentional in looking at it again, so that you can actually receive it and not just go through the motions of, oh, I'm getting my lineage. Or, oh, I have a name. But he took time when he chose a name for you. Not just your household name, not just your name, even being son and daughter, but literally in Kingdom Heirs, the time that he took to reveal your name. For so long, we were like, oh my gosh, what do we call ourselves? Like, what are we? We're not Christian. We're not this. We're not that. So much stripping. But what was being stripped? The system of Egypt and slavery and all the ways that looked in your life, it put everything on you, so it felt like you were something or someone, and you could have a million names. You could have names other people gave you, and you could have names that you gave yourself, and they made you feel really powerful and really good. And the truth was, the lie was, that you were nameless. And the reason for that was because with the identity of son, you would refuse to be a slave if you knew. If you knew the fullness of sonship, you would refuse to be a slave. If you knew what it was like to serve, to be bound to him, you would not be a slave to anything else. But he's having to strip those things off of you so that he can put back on you your true name, your true lineage, your true history, your true role, and your inheritance, honestly, so that you can lay your inheritance down. But this time, not being stripped of it, right? Did the Levites have an inheritance?
No.
So that you can lay it down, but you're laying it down.
Yeah.
It's not being used as a power move, because that's not how God is.
Right.
It's not a power move to gain control over you so that you will serve him. But it's a heart's expression from a son who knows his place and knows that it is far better to be under a dad and literally have nothing, meaning have no other name, have no other glory, have no other form of honor, have no other form of earthly praise, but to only go by one name. And it's his.
Yep.
And that's it. And that's all you want. And there's nothing else on earth.
Yes.
On earth.
Yes.
It's earth.
Yeah. Right.
It's the world. It's not that good. It's meant to be, but only when you become a son. So it's like we just keep staying so faithful to this false identity when the Redeemer is trying to express his fatherhood over you and call you to a place. But what won't we lay down? What won't we fully exchange? What won't we fully give over? This is our opportunity to recognize those things and deal with it now, because there is a census at the beginning and there is a census at the end. Just like Mom has been saying, it's not scary. It's a boundary. It's Yahweh reminding you there's a lot of desert you're going to have to walk through. There's a lot of wilderness. It's vast, and it's not very lush. It's kind of harsh. And it's tiring, and it requires a lot of your body. You guys, this is Earth. This is your journey. Like, this is you literally living. This is speaking to your life. And you can wander aimlessly about it and get lost and end up on your own and then say, like, you forsook me. Or you can acknowledge that there is a means to move through that wilderness fully protected, fully covered, staying close, and acknowledging who he is, and then in return, who you are. But speaking to the opportunity, this is an opportunity for us in that purification of hearts, going as deep as we can to our own receiving of redemption. How was it that... I don't even know what I wrote. I want to find the way he said that. Anyways, I can't find it. I lost my train of thought on it. Help me out. What was I just saying? Say that one more time, Zoe. Okay, so fully acknowledging that there was a price paid for a life redeemed. Don't hear that like an old word. This isn't a salvation message. There was a price paid for a life redeemed. Have you allowed him to buy you back? Just take that home. Have you allowed him to buy you back? Don't just say yes. It's not a salvation word. Yes, I've been saved. That's not what I'm saying. Is there a part of you that hasn't allowed him to buy you back? From the system that owned you. Are there parts of you that have rejected his offer? Why? What does it afford you? What is it doing for you? Do you fully understand your purchase price? Do you carry it? Have you received the heart transfer? After being purchased into the spirit of adoption, have you received that heart transfer from a slave owner or a taskmaster to a father? What does that look like for you on earth? Are you acknowledging him as father, and are you walking as a son? All right, that's it for this week. Hopefully, the work that we do moving from tonight will then position us and prepare us. If you don't do the work, you won't be prepared. Prepare us for next Friday.
Thank you, Megan. Really good. It's a lot of really provoking
questions, and I'm going to need to re-listen to the podcast to really get at it. I feel like even just listening to Megan tonight, I feel like Yahweh, our Redeemer, is always extremely intentional about his presence. And he's extremely intentional with us. I mean, Megan talked a lot about that tonight. And a thought crossed my mind, are we as intentional with our presence with him? I think about if I'm going on a date with Ellen, I'm intentional about my presence. I'm intentional about what I wear, intentional how I smell, intentional about my hair, where we're going, the plan, the budget. But yet, we approach Yahweh sometimes just casually in our secret times. And we just say, you know, here, let me read my Torah, let me pray, let me talk to you real quick. And we just, when we talk about making things common, I want to challenge us that even with just like this appointed time, we started the night off with that question, what is this appointed time for? And if every aspect of Yahweh's Shabbat is intentional and his presence is intentional, then what, as far as tithes and offerings, what is this appointed time for? I think of it as a holy exchange. Like, let's try and think of it like that. Like a holy exchange between an adopted son and daughter, that we are communing with Yahweh. And this is a transaction of honoring the King of Kings, our Redeemer, with our shekel, with our shekels. Which I think is really cool. This whole Torah portion, I know we haven't got all the way into the specific parts of all of it, but I mean, he's asking for shekels, which is essentially a tithe for those who are redeemed. And he is the Redeemer. So it's just really cool. And I want us to really take the time to be intentional with every appointed time that we have. And that when we give, that we are intentional with our presence and our presentation of how we give to him. And how we offer our tithe to him, our shekels to him. Does that make sense? Today is First Fruits. We have transitioned into the month of Elul, which is one of my favorite months. This is the month where the king is in the field. And he's coming to fix some things. It's the month that we dwell with him. It's the month we dwell with the Redeemer. In our tents. Like, he's coming to us. Which, again, is huge. The King of Kings, the Redeemer, is coming into our world, into our tents, into our homes to dwell with us. When we have guests coming over, how do we prepare our houses? You know, dust the dust. Sweep the dirt outside. You know, we go above and beyond. You know, we think about things like baseboards. I don't ever think about. But if the King of Kings Redeemer was coming into our homes, I bet we would be presenting something. You know? When I was thinking about this first fruits and the king is in the field, I always have this vision in my mind of like, I'm a shepherd or I'm a wheat grower or barley or something. And I have my whole family, you know, we got tents because we're all here. And then a king comes to like, he's coming. And I start thinking, I have to be intentional to welcome him. Like, he's not just going to assume to just walk right in. Like, I have to be intentional to, like, invite him in to our homes and dwelling places. And then presenting him with the best, the first portion of the increase of our harvest. Like a gift, the king is coming and we come presenting ourselves, our families, and our harvest, the best of the harvest, which is what a first fruit is. We're welcoming the king into our home. He's coming in to fix some things and to dwell with us. We have to be intentional to welcome him. We have to be intentional to give him our first, our best, our fruits, acknowledging him that he is the provider, operating in gratitude and not just complaining to the king about how we have a hard time, right? And remember, tithing rebukes the devourer from the harvest, but first fruit sanctifies the harvest, okay? That is with first fruit. So he's not common. The Redeemer is not common. And he's coming into our home, so let's be sure to posture ourselves with reverence and be aware of him. Cool? Nice.
All right, you guys, as you get your cups, I am just going to release everybody into their own communion time. So take your time individually and as households, knowing that this cup is the cup of redemption. So while we are revisiting redemption and how we have received or approached the Redeemer in our lives, that this cup would become even less common to you than it ever has before. And we just stepped into a new month, just like Gabe was saying, where the Redeemer is meeting you in your house. Is that how you said it? So in the field or in you, that you have the opportunity to be reintroduced to the Redeemer way that you haven't before. Mm-hmm. So this cup is new for you. Let it be, and don't drink from it until it is. Okay?
It certainly feels like a Kairos moment to be engaging in communion, first fruits of Elul, in the first time in Elul since we've walked through this much Torah. Like to have him in the fields and to have a word like tonight about revisiting or re-looking at redemption, and to be able to engage in communion where you're literally drinking the bride price. Like you got to drink it. Last communion was when Mom had us do communion at the beginning. Remember that? And that was before Dad released. That was kind of the beginning of the last few weeks of the super intense revelations. And last time, the wine was called Liquid Life, right? I was reminded of that, thinking of everything that we just, it's like, seriously feels like a, like, portal into another dimension in a way that I haven't experienced before in a corporate setting like this. Of, we just had the elder brother stand and open the door for us to simply walk through into a place of, have you been fully redeemed? That question is now on the table, and what we are afforded in that question is everything. Nothing that has been released will amount to anything if that is not a full yes. Meaning everything, like every, all the systems, I can't leave any of the systems without being a son first. Because I still own my time, I still own my health, I still own my finances, I still am in charge, I still know better.
Yes.
None of that is gonna, like, there's no transformation possible until all of it is his. So as we're, like, in this moment, I feel like if there's ever been a moment, it's like this moment to engage in that. As we're in Shabbat, being able, she started, one of the first questions that she asked was, where do I stand? And this was towards the beginning, really talking about redemption, using all the examples, right? Sometimes I just don't want to be redeemed. I don't want to be purchased. I don't want him to own me. I know better. I'm worth more. He needs to prove more. Like, all the things. Where do I stand in every single one of those? Where do I stand in how I'm judging others? Where do I stand? Where do I stand? Am I trying to save everybody? Where do I stand? Like, if there's ever a door that's been opened to our family, now's the chance to walk through that door and go through and answer. Where do I stand? Is it casual? Is it convenience? Is this not a big deal? Is this family not a big deal? Is Megan not a big deal? Is mom and dad not a big deal? Is it, like, all the things that we can, if we don't know what it's cost, then yes, it's not a big deal. But I just want us to feel, like, provoked to, don't miss out on what just happened tonight. She said, if you don't do the work, you won't be prepared. So if next week is anything like tonight, that's been anything like last week, we've, like, got to be getting to the grind so that we don't miss sonship. She also said, earth is not good until you become a son. So if earth sucks, or if we feel like we don't know why we're here, I feel like so many things were, like, oh, like, just crystal clear, perfect, perfect wording to click into place of, now's our chance. Like, now's the chance to walk through that place and be fully redeemed. Not from, like, we get the chance because it's on the table. So we get the chance to evaluate to salvation all the way to the core. Am I even saved? Am I even his? Being able to, anyway, where do I stand? So as we're, like, meditating on that tonight and walking through our life, like, the more we can get deep in that place of reflection, the more you can be fully his, which means you can be a son, which earth can be good. And life can be good in our, what we have, our purpose, everything will have meaning. Like it all is to this. None of it matters if we're not a son. So don't miss out on walking through that door that she just opened for us. Don't treat tonight's word as common by not doing the work of like, oh, well, that was like, felt it in the moment, but didn't do something with it. Don't leave it on the table. The point is to put it on the table so you can take it back in its rightful form, not leave it there. So, Megan, we just appreciate you sharing your heart and being able to bring a word out of this Torah portion that at face value is so just like seemingly simple, and yet it's never that way. And we are so grateful for you pressing in and delivering to our family so that we have every chance to be equipped to like do this for real.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirsflag.org. Thank you.